Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. All this week, we've been talking about noise and how you deal with it. Our cities are noisy, our homes are noisy, our neighbors are noisy. Some of those neighbors are musicians. They're paid to be noisy. And so they practice and practice. And, well, what would you do?
I know of one case where a neighbor even tried to poison the person. Yeah, they left them something to eat at the door. Said, you should try this, it's a great... And it was poisoned. Yeah.
That's pianist Seymour Bernstein. We'll hear from him and other folks on how to deal with a musician's need to practice and their neighbor's need not to go crazy or to prison. And we'll visit with guitarist Marnie Stern as she plays in her living room while the neighbors are out. And we'll hear violinist and singer Marquise Tolliver playing live here in our soundproofed studio where he won't bother anyone. But first, the cicadas are coming. Yes, the 17-year cicada swarm is about to emerge here in the Northeast, and whether you want to or not, you will soon be thinking of the sound of the insect world around us. Well, musician and philosopher David Rothenberg has actually beaten you to it. He's been thinking about the sounds of cicadas and other insects, and how those sounds have influenced human music over the years. It's the subject of his new book and accompanying CD called Bug Music. David, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks for inviting me.
So you've done birds and whales, both of whom are, you know, animals or groups of animals we think of as very songful groups. Why complete your trilogy with insects?
Well, there's really nowhere else to go, in a sense. And also, the trilogy would not be complete without delving into the most ancient, the most thrumming, the most rhythmic, really the background of perhaps all music in nature is the hum of these millions of species of creatures, where each one is like a tiny intelligence, and they make a music, one little part together, making a whole that's more than what any individual could think of.
So the subtitle of the book, Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise, do we as a species and do other animals that sing get a sense of rhythm from this kind of soundscape around us from these insects?
We might have. I mean, the usual evolutionary psychology explanations of why people like rhythm talk about the gait, human gait, a certain pace. They talk about the human heartbeat as the source of rhythms. But like all such things, it's all pure conjecture. And no doubt when humans were thinking about music and feeling a sense of beat and noise around us, insects were everywhere in the rainforest, in the savanna, all the places we were evolving. And when they are out in full force, you cannot ignore this thrumming sense of sound.
But is it music?
Is it music? Of course it's music.
Why?
I've always believed these kinds of sounds that animals make, where often the males are making a sound to attract the attention of females to notice that they are there, they are just working the way music works. They don't work the way language works. Sound, a similar thing, is repeated over and over and over again. As you know from all that you've been listening to here, when we have a hit song, we want to hear it over and over and over again. We don't need the message again and again. We need that music. We need the feel. We need the thrum, the tone, the buzz, the noise. And this is how insect sounds work, bird songs.
Now, in addition to kind of exploring the sounds that insects themselves make, as you've done with your previous books, you include a CD, much of which involves actual field recordings of the insects, and then you and, in one case at least, your son going out and sort of playing with the insects.
That's right. I've always believed that as a musician, you just have to go out there and try and make music with these sounds live to really understand what's happening. And this, I think, many more musicians should be doing, not just sampling bits of natural sound, taking it home and manipulating it, turning it into anything. Just get out there in the midst of something strange and make some music. I've been playing clarinet, bass clarinet with cicadas here. I've got my friend Timothy Hill from the Harmonic Choir doing overtone singing along with katydids. And then it was my son who figured out how to play the iPad live along with cicadas to the greatest possible effect.
And his name is?
Umru, U-M-R-U.
Okay.
It's a pseudo-Estonian name, like Arvo, except we had to make it up.
So he's playing the iPad, you're playing the clarinet, and the brood of cicadas in Lexington, Virginia, which came out last year in 2012, providing the rest of the sounds. A little bit of the music on the CD that accompanies David Rothenberg's latest book called Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. Do you think the cicadas noticed what you guys were doing?
I would say they definitely noticed the iPad, because in certain sounds, when it began to swell the way their song started to swell, they would fly onto it and go, and they'd have a light right next to it. Yeah, and you know, we know cicadas are responding to very specific things. That, you know, three related species come out at the same time, and one of them synchronizes in washes of white noise going shh. The other species has this more tonal pharaoh sound. Pharaoh, pharaoh. I think we'll have more of those up here in the next few weeks, although we will have a mix of both of them.
Mm-hmm. These are the 17-year cicadas, but there are 13-year cicadas as well?
Yes, the 13-year ones basically sound the same, although they come out this other prime-numbered cycle, and they do not mate with each other. So
okay.
They're separate species.
So cicadas, I mean, you cover many, many different insects in the book, but cicadas are kind of a theme that takes us through the story of Bug Music. They are, you know, very much in the news because we're expecting the Northeast to be hearing and seeing them again next month. How do they make their sound, and what do we think they intend by that sound? Is it simply to mate?
Well, cicadas don't make their sound by rubbing their legs or wings. They have an organ on the side of their abdomen called a timbal. It's like a round thing, like the head of a drum. They vibrate. And the cicadas that come out every year also have these. And this is this device that's able to make this loud, incredibly gigantic sound.
Not everyone's going to want to go wading out among these bugs with instruments in hand. But the idea that insects might actually sort of respond to what we do, as opposed to us responding to what they do, is an interesting one. And you write in the book about David Dunn, the scientist who's also a composer himself, doing work with these bark beetles.
David Dunn is a composer who figured out how to listen inside of trees because he likes making DIY microphones. And he made a microphone with a meat thermometer and some piezoelectric discs and stuck it inside a tree. And he heard these amazing sounds. Now, these bark beetles in the American West are destroying hundreds of thousands of acres of trees, and we have no idea what to do about this. It's doing huge amounts of damage. It has something to do with the warming temperature of the planet. They're just not dying in the winter. They're destroying more and more and more. And until he listened inside the tree, no one realized that they had a complex acoustic life. You don't just hear them munching. You hear them communicating to each other. And after that, he got the idea, well, let's play them some sounds and see how they're listening, what we can do to them. And when he played the sounds of rival beetle species that weren't supposed to be in that kind of tree, the beetles would start to attack each other, just do crazy things. He even played the voice of Rush Limbaugh. But he says there's too much coverage of that in the media. We probably shouldn't have done that. He just wanted a kind of loud, harsh voice to see what that would do to them. In fact, we have little idea what's really doing to them, and there's hardly any way you could imagine using this technique to make a difference in the population, because you'd have to play so much music into all these different trees we really don't know what to do about it. But once Dunn discovered the sounds were going on, now there's a whole scientific field of bark beetle acoustic communication going on.
The idea that you can not only disrupt their communication but get these pests, which is what they are in this situation, to turn on each other simply through sound is a really kind of unusual idea and potentially a whole new avenue
it's an odd thing they found out. And because of this, David Dunn has become a scientist and worked together with scientists to investigate this phenomenon. And I think that there could be many more cases of this, musicians and composers working together with scientists, becoming scientists and working on these issues.
Mm. We're speaking with David Rothenberg, who's just published Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. It is the third and most disgusting volume in his trilogy about the sounds of wildlife, birds and whales in the first two books. You said before, it's one thing to sort of like go out and sample sounds and bring them into the studio and make something. It's another thing to actually go out, be with the insects, make music as we heard you do before. But you have taken samples of insect sounds and brought them into the studio and done stuff with them, right?
That's right. It's hard to resist because the sounds are so interesting. And we know that today more and more people are getting this fluidity at being able to change one sound into anything else. And this is something used to be very specialized, and now it's accessible to anyone with a computer or a phone. And so we're starting to learn more about this, and people are starting to understand how interesting it is to take one sound and turn it into something else and see what musical ideas come out.
So what are you doing with these engraver beetles? First of all, these are sort of related to those bark beetles you were talking about?
Yeah, engraver beetles are the kind of beetles that might be in a piece of wood you bring in, put it by the fireplace, it kind of warms up, you start hearing sounds from your wood. They've been alive there, it's getting warm, they're slowly munching it. And so it has amazing possibilities what you can do with it. And so this piece is the conclusion, the kind of loud thing. It's called The Year of Insect Thinking. What happened to me when I spent like a few years just listening to these crazy sounds and trying to think of them in musical ways.
This is from the CD that accompanies David Rothenberg's book, Bug Music. Rothenberg with some, I guess we'll call that electronic music.
If you actually read insect science papers, they sound like electronic music manuals. They're talking about oscillators and carrier frequencies and frequency modulation. This is what physically the insects are doing to make sound. They are like little synthesizers. And just as we now find musicians going back to analog synthesizers, you may find them going further back and using like bugs as electronic instruments and connecting them together. And I do have one recording, you probably have it somewhere too, of some guy using a live beetle as a mouth harp. He's going, and the beetle's going, it's from the Roots of Drone CD, which came out last year.
I missed that one.
That's like,
I missed the guy with the beetle in his mouth.
This is the direction we might be able to go.
David Rothenberg is with us on Soundcheck, musician, composer, philosopher, author of the books Why Birds Sing and Thousand Mile Song, which was about whale song. His latest book is called Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. And Bernie Krause, you talk about in the book briefly. He has this idea of these kind of natural symphonies where, insects have their own niche in the quote-unquote score. Where would insects be in that score?
Well, if you hear this wonderful recording that Bernie Krause and Louis Sarno made in the Congo of the Bayaka pygmies singing along. Women are collecting mushrooms, and they're singing along with the sounds of frogs, birds, and insects it seems like everyone's voice has a place in the acoustic mix. It's one of the best examples of that. And then you look at the sonogram, the printout, you can see everyone's got their own frequency. They stay out of each other's way. And so you have this idea that maybe as human music evolved, it was in the midst of these soundscapes and people knew how to sing their way into the forest. And today, you know, we create our own environments. You know, there's a lot we can learn from just put on a recording of how people were singing along with their environment and think, how could we do something like that in our society today?
A lot of traditional singing, you know, a lot of traditional music, very ancient musical traditions are all about sort of responding to, imitating the environment. Think of Central Asian throat singing and stuff like that, you know, the sound of the wind and all of that. Do you hear echoes of insect song, insect music in human endeavors?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I put together this playlist of all the things I could find that where insect sounds influence human music in a variety of ways all throughout history. And there are not as many as birds, but there's quite a few. And what's so remarkable is they're so different from one another.
So, of course, Flight of the Bumblebee, the Rimsky-Korsakov piece, is a good example. Your playlist includes the Harry James version.
I picked the Harry James version because
because you're a clarinetist.
Well, he's playing trumpet, but because it's the most it's just so funny. And I think what Flight of the Bumblebee is about is trying to get Western classical music to encompass insect music. You know, Rimsky-Korsakov is trying to get capture this bee sound in the chromatic scale. It's kind of ridiculous.
Harry James version of Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee. Harry James's big band arrangement of Flight of the Bumblebee. David Rothenberg giving us a playlist along with the CD that comes with his new book, Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. All right, David, let's come back to where we started, which is with the cicadas. What would you tell people to listen for when the northeastern brood starts making its appearance in a couple of weeks?
Oh, before you hear them, you're going to see these holes in the ground, little round holes in the ground, and the white nymphs will be coming up, and they'll come out like early in the morning and start to climb up the trees. And if you want to eat them, this is the best time to eat them before the wings sprout. They're more tasty and juicy, and you can fry them up. And
there's a recipe.
Recipe book on the WNYC website, I should add. It's not me that's spreading this stuff. And John Cooley, the scientist, says he's not a fan of this, what he calls a meme, internet meme about cicada eating. He says, don't do it. You know, we don't know what effect it'll have on the population. So
of cicadas.
I think there's millions of cicadas. They will win, but no matter how many you eat. But Cooley's the expert. He says, you know, don't go out there encouraging everyone to eat cicadas just because this is a
just
foodie
because you can.
Culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the first thing that happens, and then they'll climb up the trees and they'll gradually morph. The wings will appear, and they will become full adults, and then they will start to sing. And the basic sound you're going to hear is the pharaoh sound, pharaoh. Pharaoh. Pretty soon, you'll hear a few of those, but pretty soon there'll be thousands, then hundreds of thousands, then millions, and the end of the phrase will drop off, and you'll just hear like a tone, a single tone, like a drone around you. And when they're at their peak, if you're anywhere where they're there, it'll be hard to think about anything else or hear any other music.
I was just going to say, at what point do we lose our collective minds and civilization comes crashing down around us?
Well, it did appear on The Simpsons as an indicator of the end of the world, 17-year cicadas in an episode a few weeks ago. So it's spreading around. But this is also the best time to go out there and sing with them and try and make music and participate in this phenomenon, you know, because they've been eating underground for 17 years, ready to come up just to sing, fly, mate, and die. And you, too, can participate in this revelry.
David Rothenberg's latest book is called Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. Comes with a CD full of the sounds of insects in their natural state, electronically processed, playing with humans, all of that on the CD that comes with the book. David, great to see you again.
Thanks for inviting me on the show, John.
This is Soundcheck. That constant humming noise is going to be all too familiar here on the East Coast in the coming weeks as the cicadas begin to emerge from their 17-year underground party. And as we prepare for Swarmageddon, WNYC is running a cicada project, and you can find out more about our cicada tracker by going to soundcheck.org.